Chapter 5, Thinking Ahead to Your Third Cycle of Visits. Let's take a moment to look ahead and see how the high-performance instructional leadership model will help you deepen your practice of visiting classrooms in the coming weeks. The first round of visits focuses on making a positive impression to help teachers become comfortable with your increased presence in their classrooms. In your second round, you'll start to directly root your conversations with teachers in specific evidence, particularly evidence pertaining to the instructional framework you identified in Chapter 2, page 15. In these first two cycles, conversations with teachers should remain completely positive unless you've encountered a major problem that you need to address. In your third cycle of visits, you'll want to fully enact the high-performance instructional leadership model. This chapter will help you prepare your staff, develop a note-taking and note-sharing process, further develop your instructional framework, and integrate classroom visits into your daily habits. By doing so, it will help you set yourself and your staff up for success from the outset, so the process of visiting classrooms and talking with teachers starts to yield benefits and becomes a permanent habit in your instructional leadership repertoire. Keep an open mind. By the time you've visited every classroom twice, you may start to identify patterns that lead you to certain areas of focus that you want to investigate more carefully. For example, you may notice a wide variation in teachers' approaches to using questioning strategies with students, so you may want to pay special attention to such strategies in your third round of visits. Two notes of caution are in order. First, resist the tendency to inflate the validity of any trends you identify in your first two rounds. After visiting three classrooms a day for a few weeks, you'll know far more than most instructional leaders about what's taking place in classrooms, and it'll be tempting to believe that you're ready to roll out an action plan in response to what you've seen. However, you'll have seen a very small proportion of the total instruction that's taken place. The information you'll gain has enormous value, but you should not treat it as a scientific or representative sample. It's based on just a few minutes in each classroom, and very little substantive conversation with teachers. In your third cycle, commit to having more in-depth, evidence-based, and framework-linked conversations with teachers. This will help you draw more accurate conclusions and develop a deeper understanding of each teacher's opportunities for growth. Second, be mindful of the fact that when you visit classrooms, teachers change their behavior compared to when you aren't in the room. In other words, there's an observer effect. Your schedule is also likely constrained by existing patterns in the day, such as the lunch schedule and teachers' prep periods, so your visits throughout each class and throughout the day aren't randomly distributed. You'll gain valuable decisional information, but it's far from fully representative data about what's taking place in classrooms, so take it with a grain of salt when deciding on next steps. Prepare staff for your third round of visits. As you wrap up your second round of visits, announce to your staff that you've been enjoying your visits to classrooms and that you intend to deepen the practice. Explain that your visits would be more informative and helpful to you as a leader if you had the chance to talk in greater depth with teachers after you visit. Then, reveal that you'll be taking notes about what you see in classrooms, and that you'll be sharing and discussing these notes with each teacher after each visit. If you plan to email your notes to teachers, explain your purpose and clarify your expectations for whether teachers need to reply. By setting expectations with your entire staff at once, you'll avoid making individuals feel targeted or harassed. Take notes and share them with teachers. Ideally, you'll want to have brief, face-to-face conversations with teachers after each visit. Since these conversations can't always happen immediately, it's important to reassure teachers that you aren't compiling secret dossiers on them, which will be a legitimate concern if you suddenly appear, laptop in hand, and start taking copious notes. If you've explained in advance that you'll be sharing these notes with the teacher immediately, you will have assuaged many of these potential fears. You may want to take a detailed running record of what you notice in the classroom, using low-inference, descriptive notes with timestamps. Or you may prefer to jot down less detailed notes, simply capturing enough information to inform your subsequent conversation. For example, you may write 942, students working independently on practice problems, teacher circulating to monitor their work. Asks one student, how did you get that answer? Followed by 947, student asks, is this like what we did yesterday? Whatever your style, strive to capture verbatim teacher and student quotes and describe clearly what the teacher and students are doing. Don't include commentary, compliments, or suggestions. Your notes should be purely descriptive. You may interpret your notes later when writing a formal evaluation, but for now, description is all you need. You don't need to write down everything that happens, but be sure that what you record is as descriptive as possible. You have several options for the form your notes take when you deliver them. The simplest way to share notes with teachers is to simply send them an email, which requires no other apps or special technology. If your school uses an evaluation or feedback management system or app, you may want to send your notes through that system for consistency and convenience. Many instructional leaders have told me they prefer to take handwritten notes and that they believe teachers find this practice less intimidating than taking typewritten notes. While individual preferences will vary, keep in mind that handwritten notes are significantly more difficult to share with teachers because you'll want to keep a copy for your records so you can easily access your notes later. You can take a photo of handwritten notes with your phone, but if these photos aren't organized carefully, they'll be of limited use. Transparency about what you are writing down is essential for building trust in this process, so it's best to immediately share your notes electronically rather than photograph or make a copy of hard-to-read handwritten notes later. Forge stronger links to your instructional framework. Your third round of visits is a key point in your instructional leadership trajectory. Don't miss this chance to intensify your focus on the language and criteria of your instructional framework. Since instructional frameworks often serve as evaluation tools, you might be tempted to use your framework to evaluate what you see during your third round of visits, but that's not our approach in the high-performance instructional leadership model. Instead of using your instructional framework to evaluate the instruction you see, use it to expand and sharpen your vocabulary for talking about teaching and learning. You may not even need to explicitly mention the framework in any given conversation. As its language becomes second nature to you and your staff, it can make a difference whether it's identified as a participant in the conversation or not. For example, you may choose to adopt Charlotte Danielson's 2007 Enhancing Professional Practice, a framework for teaching, as part of your instructional framework. Danielson, 2007, outlines 22 components of professional teacher practice in four broad domains. 1. Planning and preparation. 2. The classroom environment. 3. Instruction. And 4. Professional responsibilities. Each of the 22 components includes four leveled descriptors of practice: unsatisfactory, basic, proficient, and distinguished. If you visit a classroom during a lively class discussion, you might quickly glance at your framework to review its language about questioning techniques and managing class discussions. You might notice, for example, that Danielson's 2007 Domain 3, Component B, is using questioning and discussion techniques, and that the distinguished column uses the phrases, quote, challenge students cognitively, unquote, and, quote, students challenge one another's thinking, end quote. Even if you don't make explicit references to these criteria in your notes or conversation, you can strive to use vocabulary consistent with your framework and to address the issues that are most salient according to the framework. However, if you explicitly position it as the authoritative standard on professional practice, your framework can help you have more rigorous, yet less adversarial conversations with teachers. This keeps your conversation from becoming a battle of wills or competing education philosophies, and allows you to focus squarely on the evidence and what it means relative to the framework's criteria. To make reference to your instructional framework, you might use sentence structures such as the following. I was looking over our framework standards for criterion, and I noticed that evidence. Our framework talks about setting instructional outcomes in criterion, and I noticed that evidence. How would you situate that evidence within the performance descriptors? Looking at the criteria from our framework, what stands out to you from evidence? Remember an important distinction. You should avoid any attempt to rate or score teachers based on individual pieces of evidence, because teacher evaluation criteria are for evaluating the teacher's overall practice, not specific instances. Avoid statements such as, you did evidence, so you're proficient on our framework. The evidence may align with descriptors of a particular level of performance, but the evidence itself is not a discrete performance that you can score. Instead, the evidence provides a basis for triangulating expectations. It allows teachers and instructional leaders to explore their mutual understandings of the criteria and the pattern that may be developing over time. But we need more than a single piece of evidence. It's only after a pattern has emerged that you can conduct a valid evaluation of the teacher's practice. Finally, when you're discussing the evidence and the instructional framework, the teacher should do most of the talking. One strategy you can use to keep the conversation going without taking too heavy a role in guiding it is to ask broken questions. For example, you might say, so, looking at Standard 7 and thinking about what we saw today, What do you see as... and simply trail off. Don't ask a specific question, just suggest a direction and let the teacher run with it. Yeah, I wanted students to have the chance to discuss Maya Angelou's life experiences and how they shaped her writing. Or you might cite a particular incident you observed and let the teacher interpret it. So, I noticed that group 3 got into a discussion of earthquakes. How did that? And the teacher might chime in with, I know it seems a little bit off topic, but I was pleased that they made the connection. Such questions may sound awkward in writing, but in verbal conversation, it's perfectly natural for the teacher to jump in and pick up where you leave off. Broken questions can allow you to inquire into specific issues without framing them as either positive or negative, so you can avoid putting the teacher on the defensive. Experience the rewards of the classroom habit. As you enter your third round of visits, you'll find countless reasons to let your daily practice of visiting classrooms slip. There will be a holiday break, you'll be out of the building for professional development, or half the school will be on a field trip. Or perhaps you'll just get busier than usual. Regardless of the factors standing in your way, stick with it. You've experienced success in visiting 3 classrooms a day, and you've helped your teachers warm up to your visits and the subsequent conversations. In the first 2 cycles, the benefits of your high-performance instructional leadership practice will be mostly interpersonal. You'll be more present and visible to your teachers, and you'll have more chances to acknowledge their work. As you begin your third cycle of visits, you'll start to notice a profound shift. You'll know dramatically more about what's going on in every classroom. Though your visits will continue to be brief, you'll develop a deeper understanding of your school's curricula, as well as each teacher's strengths and weaknesses. You'll gain a greater sense of the key opportunities and challenges your school faces, and this will enable you to make better decisions about how to allocate scarce resources, such as time and money. The immediate and ongoing benefit of implementing the high-performance instructional leadership model is that it continually provides what leaders need most: information to inform decisions. This information will continue to flow to you, and the more consistently you visit classrooms, the more clarity you'll gain about what to do with it. It's essential at this point to not allow classroom visits to become something you do only when time allows. Take control of your schedule and make time. Make it a habit to visit 3 classrooms a day, and you'll wonder how you ever made decisions without doing so. Day 5 Action Challenge: Visit a team. Today, visit 3 members of a department, grade level, or other team. As you continue your daily rounds, strive to visit members of teams back to back. You may want to consider the following questions for reflection. What am I learning that I wouldn't have noticed if I hadn't visited members of the same team back to back? Which teachers did I feel the most reluctant to visit? What similarities and differences between teachers stood out most as I visited members of the same team? Continue to focus on relationship and rapport building. Always have a brief conversation with each teacher after you visit, even if it's after school or the following day. Talking with every teacher you visit is essential for preventing any fear or suspicion about what you noticed during the visit. If you need to set aside time during a teacher's prep period to ensure that you have a chance to chat, mark it on your calendar. As you progress through the book, continue visiting 3 classrooms a day. Keep track of your visits and make sure you aren't skipping anyone. In the next 2 cycles, you'll visit teachers in the same order.